Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone, and welcome to this episode of Only Murders in My Mind with Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
And Michael Jackson.
Hello there.
Right, so how are you both? You okay?
Yes, I think so, yes. It's a warm day, but bearing up.
Yes, summer has arrived.
Yeah. Oh. I think this is summer. I saw a tweet recently where somebody was complaining about the fact that at that stage we were halfway through June and still no summer. Mm. And the person in the tweet said, what you're forgetting, it's not really June. It's January the 173rd.
It has felt like that. Yes. We've been like having yet another cold, wet day. And then, you know, they tell you it's the hottest month on record. You're like, where? What? It certainly isn't here.
I must have slept through that. Yes.
But
this is a good segue, actually, because this leads us very nicely into our subject for today, which is crime settings and the weather. Now,
as
you might think, you might think to yourself, what's that got to do with it? But it's got a lot to do with it. And we're going to discuss this sort of thing that makes a series, a film, a book. You just immerse yourself in that particular setting. And you know, we went back to talking about the things that happen in the Norway and Sweden. We always expect it to be cold and everything white, and very often it's you know, a bit lonely, and you're thinking to yourself, if they get stuck in that snowstorm, how are they going to get out? So the first one I'm going to talk about is Where the Crawdads Sing.
Oh,
which is Delia Owens.
This.
I haven't read it. I wish I had, but I saw the film.
Ah.
And I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And this lass is, I won't go through the whole, you know, premise, because people might want to watch the film or read the book, but she's basically stuck out in a swamp somewhere trying to survive. And that comes across, you know, how isolated she is and how she's got nobody to turn to. So straight away, I thought, yeah, I can understand why it's important where the setting is. Whether it always seemed to be, apart from rain, because as I say, it's a swamp, it always seems to be hot and steamy. You know, you can sort of imagine it. And when I've seen television plays or films where it's been set in sort of, I'm just trying to think, sort of in parts of America where it's always, they're always on the balcony, you know, fanning themselves and all this sort of thing. Mind you, a lot of areas in America get hot, don't they? But yes, this is the sort of setting that evokes our mindset into what's going to happen. And then we want to be taken out of that. Now, that isn't so much a crime book, but I definitely needed the atmosphere and the weather to make it realistically. Are any come to mind for you, Liz? That
In terms of settings?
Yes.
Well, can you imagine Miss Marple in Manhattan?
No.
Exactly. Imagine her in a yellow cab and then, you know, going up the Empire State Building. It's just, you just can't see it.
It wouldn't happen, would it?
No.
And the Hound of Baskervilles is not going to happen on Barbados, is it?
No. Yeah.
Or in a shopping centre. No.
Yeah, so you know, things like that. And,
you think of Sherlock Holmes, you think of London Fog.
Yeah, yes.
And you think of hansom cabs.
Yeah. Yes.
Even though there's one where there's an underground train and it's an integral part of the plot.
Yeah.
And it just seems very, very odd. You know, and even though there are ones like the Hound of the Baskervilles, where he goes off to Dartmoor, isn't it? Or Grimpen Mire.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, but those feel like unusual. It's still that kind of dark, misty sort of. So he's sort of taken his atmosphere with him in a way.
I forget how long the underground has been in London.
Yes, and one of the first ones, of course, was Baker Street.
Yes, yeah. Well, there so, you go.
Yeah, I'm, it would have been there from the beginning.
I'm going on an underground, I'm going to London this coming weekend, and I'm going on an underground tour.
Oh, lovely.
So the ones that aren't used anymore. The stations that aren't
take
used
pictures, anymore. Take pictures.
I will take lots of pictures. And this is very often where they stage films and television series because they don't want the general public about.
Yeah. If you get to see Mornington Crescent, definitely take a picture. Yes.
Yeah.
I wonder when authors are writing the books, like the crime novels, murder mystery, whether they start off with a particular setting in mind, or certainly weather in mind, or how important is setting, weather, and plot? You know, can you have one without the other? You know, if
it depends on the country, doesn't it?
Yeah. Why did you decide that you're going to have a series in Warrington and environs?
Yeah, because I
sorry to put you on the spot.
No, I used to work on the district as a nurse on something called the evening service. I don't think it exists anymore. And I used to get lost frequently going around Warrington, but I did learn all the rat runs, which areas you shouldn't be in. You know, if you're a district nurse with a bag. That could have drugs in it, where you shouldn't be at 11 o'clock at night on your own.
Yes, good point.
all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And as people have said to me, why Warrington? And I said, well why Midsummer? Why Paradise? Why Oxford?
Yeah.
You know, it's what I know. So that's why I write it. And it's in the town where I live. And because the squad that do these investigations are actually the Cheshire Series Crime Squad, it does give me a bit of leeway to go further afield because, you know, they can go into other areas in Cheshire. And as a district nurse, you used to go to all the areas, you know, posh, unposh, places where you wiped your feet on the way out, all that sort of thing, yeah. The characters are dealt with, the people that are dealt with, you got a flavour for the sort of the community that they lived in. And as I say, it's relevant just like being in Oxford and, you know, with all these academics, or being on Paradise with all the sand between your toes. So, you know, crime, I feel comfortable. But people did say to me, why Warrington? And that's the answer. It's just because I know it. Yeah. Probably better than anywhere else.
Yeah. Makes sense.
You take something like Midsummer Murders, you could take the plot
anywhere
and put it anywhere, couldn't you?
But people in this country and from abroad love the fact that it's beautiful, typical English villages.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people, Americans and what, like, they think that is England.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit of a shock when they go to some of the cities and things.
I think because I tend to write very short stories, I don't usually have to give setting, weather, anything like that.
Or quite often it's in a location. And
yes.
A lot of your stories are indoors.
Yes, they are.
Or in somebody's house or in a sort of an unnamed mysterious room.
Mm. Yeah, you did do one where two ladies are knitting in the community centre. I'm sure you did. Plotting somebody's death.
Yeah. Oh, there's a surprise.
Well, I suppose with much of what I write, it's about people, sometimes what they're thinking, what they're planning, what they're doing.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, the setting is almost irrelevant.
Yeah, whereas I think, for me, the setting is very relevant. I kind of want to get the vibes of it. And when I was doing my first series where I thought, okay, this is actually going to be a series as opposed to accidentally falling into doing a series, which is what I did with the first few books. I was very much, right, okay, I am going to have a place and it's going to have these villages around it and there's going to be a county town, it's going to have a river and these are the shops, and I drew a map, you know, and it was very much, right, this is how it's going to be.
Mm.
So, yeah, and I mean, with writing kind of alternative Sherlock versions, the world is pretty much set up for you, and you can't really divert from it that much.
It's interesting what you're saying about a map. Some of the Miss Reed books, who is one of my favourite authors for, you know, nice, easy reading that makes you feel good most of the time. Very often her books will have little maps of the village at the front. And you can say, oh, well, Miss Smith lives there and, you know, Mr. Brown lives there. And you can sort of get this feeling of the characters like that. But
and sometimes the setting can be very simple, can't it? Oh. I'm thinking now of the chap who I like reading. I can never get to grips with his first name. I think it's Kem McDonnell.
Yes.
Stranger Times, for example.
Yes, yes.
Stranger Times is an old building in Manchester.
It is.
Now, the fact that it's in Manchester, to a certain extent, is almost irrelevant. It could be in any big city. But the building itself almost becomes a focal part. You begin to picture in your mind the different office spaces.
Yes.
And,
it describes it quite well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I've been in a building that it probably isn't, but I feel like it could be because it's got a really ancient lift and it's got lots of floors and all
a basement.
That. Yes, indeed.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, some of the things that when we Google a lot, you know, I won't lie to you. Why do we need crime settings, stroke weather? And it says mood, danger, isolation, darkness, tension, mystery, bad weather, grit.
No so pressure.
All these things are making the atmosphere for bad things to happen.
Mm.
You know, one of the things that I always find a bit threatening are dense woodlands.
Yes.
Mm. You know, because it'd be so easy to get lost, wouldn't it? You know, if you're wandering on your own, well, you're wandering with somebody else. And there have been crime films, books, etc., where a forest has been like the place where people have gone missing, been murdered.
Yeah.
I suppose the other thing, too, is that you can create that tension and that mystery in some ordinary settings. So you could have an ordinary care home setting.
Yeah.
And it depends on what you do with the characters and what happens. That can either make it dark and deep and mysterious.
Yeah. Or maybe it's, you know, stuffy and humid and it feels airless and you feel like it's hard to breathe or something like that. Something I was thinking of when we were talking about this topic was the pathetic fallacy, which, and I had to look it up because I vaguely remember this from my English degree days. Writers use the pathetic fallacy to evoke a specific mood or feeling that usually reflects their own or a character's internal state. So the sun was smiling down upon him, the raindrops wept around her. I think it's a John Ruskin thing.
Yeah.
And that kind of feeling of the environment mirroring how you're feeling or the mood of what's going on.
It's that breath holding, isn't it? You know, when you're in I mean, how many times do the police go into a dark house? And I'm going, why don't they just put the lights on?
Yes.
Where's the fun in that, Carol? Come on.
And they've got a little torch, you know, and it's all building up. The thing about the nursing home, I can just picture somebody who's got reduced mobility being in bed and somebody, you know, that's dressed in black with a balaclava and going into their room at night. And all of a sudden, that safe environment is murderous, isn't it? You know, it's really threatening sort of thing. Yeah.
Or there's a smell of an air freshener that suddenly becomes really oppressive and, you know,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to be in a care home with either of these.
No, I mean, I can't say I've ever used weather in any of my books, not to build up an atmosphere or anything. I've had some dark cellars.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think sometimes I'm quite, you know, sometimes they'll go outside and it'll be a lovely autumn day and it'll be all fresh and crisp and nice. And then, you know, other times, you know, they'll head out for a walk and it'll be like dismal and gloomy and the air will be thick or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that kind of the environment reflecting what's going on. But I suppose in The Magical Bookshop, I had a lot of fun with the weather.
Yes, she did.
There's an episode in the first book where poor Gemma gets absolutely soaked.
Yeah. There's a bit of flooding going on at one time.
She's gone off
in
a paddy, and the heavens just open.
Yeah.
But in that book, Liz, it's very much the setting is the bookshop. Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Everything happens.
But lots of strange.
And you can feel the temperature drop.
Yes.
Yeah. Or the air become kind of, you know,
and
close.
It's like when the cat's about and, you know, things start flying off the shelves and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Sort of sitting on top of the books going, you're not having these, they're mine.
Good old Folio.
Oh, yes. Yes. Mm.
Are you going to read something, Mike?
If you two keep talking, I've got a 100-word story here that's set in a care home.
Oh, yes. Ooh, right.
Fabulous. I think, but you'll need to keep talking.
Because you're trying to find it.
I'll tell you what, I've got a bit talking about setting generally. And I was talking about the Pippa series earlier, which is my first kind of, it was my first series where I thought, right, this is a series, I'm going to actually plan this. And this is how it begins. The River Gad pierces the heart of Gadsdershire. It flows wide and strong in the county town of Gadsder, deep enough for ferries, pleasure boats and pedalos to ply a tourist trade at the Heritage Quay. But above Gadsder, the river's tributaries are slow and narrow. The slowest of these runs through the village of Much Gadding. It is shallow, clear and much prized by the locals for the picturesque quality it lends to the village centre. It also lends a distinct dampness to the listed cottages in its vicinity. This is in addition to the natural climate of Much Gadding, which is inclined to rain. A rambler on the river path would have noticed an unusual addition to the scene one Friday lunchtime. That is, if a rambler were present, because it was raining the sort of fine rain that soaks you through after 15 minutes. The river was grey, to match the sky. The vegetation was lush and green, dripping onto the path and onto the glistening, treacherous cobbles of River Lane. And backing slowly up River Lane was a bright red removal lorry, whose driver leaned out of the window, frowning and swearing under his breath as the rain found its bald spot. "It's no good, Mrs. Parker," he shouted. "Road's too narrow to get her any further." The lorry sighed in confirmation as he put on the handbrake and settled to wait, rumbling to itself. Mrs. Parker rumbled too. She was standing outside a small, quaint cottage holding a thumb-sucking toddler. An observer would have found her hard to describe, as she was wearing an overcoat which flapped round her wellies and had a sun hat jammed low on her head. Only medium height and bobbed brown hair were visible. Oh, and expecting a baby quite soon.
Yes.
So I decided to take a sort of an aerial view and then you kind of focus in to meet her.
Yeah,
Pippa
that works. Yeah. I can just visualise it all because I've read those books, thoroughly enjoyed them. And there is quite a lot of descriptive writing in it for where they are and everything, I feel. Have you found your nursing home?
No, but what is surprising me, because I always surprise myself when I go back and read what I've in my stories, mm-hmm. is that I've got quite a few here that are very much in a setting, even though it's only a 100-word story. Mm. Let's try this one, Saint-Pierre.
Ooh.
In the quaint town of Saint-Pierre, the ancient clock tower stood tall, its face frozen at 3:07. Legend told of a ghostly figure appearing precisely at that time, eternally waiting for a lover who never returned. One overcast afternoon, as people sipped coffee nearby, a shadowy silhouette materialised by the tower. An eerie silence fell. A local, daring to confront the apparition, approached, but found nothing but cold air. At 3:08, the apparition vanished as suddenly as it had appeared. So did the local. The clock showed 3:08. For the first time in centuries, it had moved forward.
Ooh.
So there's a setting.
There you go, very atmospheric.
Not got any more like that.
Yeah. I watch them. I linger here in the corridors of our old house, unseen but ever present. My fingers brush against the living, drawing shivers down their spines. They blame the draughts on ill-fitting windows and half-closed doors, never suspecting the truth. I watch them, my son, my daughter, their young lives unfolding without me. My husband's new love fills my vases with fresh flowers, as if to banish my memory. But at night, I stand by their bed and whisper old secrets into their dreams. My laughter blends with the wind. They never understand their nightmares, the chill of unresolved farewells.
You and your whispering things into people's ears.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you ever say, "You can stay in my spare room," no, I will not. I will go down to the Travelodge.
And one more, then I'll be quiet.
Okay.
This is Stonehenge. So there's a setting.
There you go.
Yeah.
And this is dialogue, just dialogue. Ah. But Dad, them druids said it was important we get it right. Said we've got to stick to these drawings they've done. Stonehenge, they're going to call it. Reckon it'll still be here hundreds of years from now. That's all well and said, son, but we've still got to build it. Look at them drawings. Typical of them druids, always got their heads in the clouds. With what they're paying us, there's no way they're going to get anything as fancy as that. Just stick a few stone columns in the ground, lad. That'll do. They'll not notice the difference.
Oh, yeah, it's going back to settings. One of mine and Liz's favourite television series, Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, yes.
I mean, what now a setting. Then. What a setting.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, I suppose. It's a sort of extension of, you know, the country house.
Yes.
Murder.
It is, isn't it? Yes.
And they have a whole apartment building.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know. And we go into different characters' apartments and they're all different.
And in its own way, it's like a little village.
Oh, it is, yeah.
You know, well, except that Sting lives there sometimes, which is unusual in a village.
Yeah, well, that's what All Manner of People was predicting, was representing.
I think they got the idea from you, Carol.
I think they did as well, yeah. Where you've got people living in an old manor house. Yeah. So they really don't want to have anything to do with each other. But they can't avoid each other. And the reason they can't avoid each other in this case is because there's a lovely central staircase that leads up to quite a few of the apartments, flats, whatever you want. But what's the building called in Only Murders?
The Arconia, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of place if you were rich.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Absolutely gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason Mabel's there, isn't it? Because it's her aunt's apartment that she's kind of looking after.
It's being done up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they're all saying to her, how somebody so young can afford a place like this, you know. But in the last series thing, Move on a Pace with that apartment sort of. Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising, I watched an episode of Monk.
I watch Monk all the time.
I think these two are far ahead of me. I'm on series two, episode something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's about another six series to go.
I think I'm on six.
I'm about 96 more episodes to go, I think, if I get to the end. But the great thing, the episode I've just watched, Monk is in New York, and he hates it.
Can't cope, can
he? Just can't cope. And he really does engender that feeling of the panic that you can get when you're in a busy place with the noise, with the people, with the bustling. And I suppose in some ways that's where the setting is important to the story because... Yeah. Of the character, you know, the writer's taken that character and purposely put him somewhere where he knows the character does not want to be.
In some ways, going back to Only Murders, the most interesting episode is the one where you get it from the perspective of the guy who is deaf.
Yes,
and it's in his world, so you only hear sort of vague, swimmy sounds the whole time.
Yeah. Because he lip reads, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's absolutely mesmerising.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. It's really well. They write it, don't they? The two main stars in it. They co-write it, don't they?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think they do.
We'll have to look it up.
Sorry, if I've got that wrong, folks. But I think they do.
It also goes back when you think of the setting. Goes back to an episode we've done before about Nordic noir.
Yeah,
And the countries that quite often they're set in, places like Denmark, Norway. I always imagine it's beautiful places, you know, lovely scenery and what have you. But they purposely, the writers of those grim stories, purposely take you to the grimmest parts.
Yeah,
you know,
inhospitable, I imagine. Yeah,
you know, you don't see the lovely scenery. You just see these dingy alleys and graffiti. Written walls or whatever. Yeah.
Whereas if you're somewhere like Death in Paradise, I assume it's always lovely.
It's always lovely.
And they're always going to find the person and everything's going to be all right again.
In the end. But I mean, they do have hurricanes and typhoons occasionally.
Ah.
Because I remember in the first series, they were going, we've got a, you know, type two, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the very English detective was saying, you think that's bad? You should have seen the storms in, was it 66 or 76? I took down the New Forest. We can cope with this. And the next minute he's trying to open a door and he can't even open the door. You know, it's...
I wonder if writers sometimes take us into settings that we would never dream of going to.
Yes.
For example, you know, we all know big cities, Manchester, London. There are certain parts you wouldn't dream of going at night. But... in a story, you're quite happy for somebody to take you into those dreadful places.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, thinking about some friend of the show, Paula Harmon, in her Margaret Demaray series, you know, Margaret often has to venture into places that aren't remotely safe. or she'll end up going into a sweatshop, you know, a clothes factory that is a highly unsafe environment where, you know, to be honest, it could fall down any minute.
Yeah.
You know, or she ends up going into areas where, you know, people don't necessarily speak English and they look at her with superstition. And
I mean,
she's got some credibility because, you know, hopefully someone there will know she's that lady doctor who sticks her nose in, but she is, you know, quite possibly going to. Yeah, she is taking a chance.
Do you need to, as a writer, though, do you need to have experience of these settings?
Good question. I mean, I know Paula does a lot of research. She reads a lot of like first-hand accounts of places and, you know, old maps, and she goes into the British newspaper archives and like reads, you know, stuff from the time. So
it's right what you know, isn't it?
It's what you know or what you can find out.
Yeah, true. Yes.
Through, as you say, through Paula doing that research, she sort of almost...
I went to the Temple Church in London for research for my last book. Because some of the book is set in and around the church. And I really felt when I was writing about it that I knew what it was like. You know, it was, I didn't just look at pictures, I'd actually been there. Because again, one of my favourite writers has got a book, and it's based, the start of the book is based in Venice.
Yeah.
And she went to, very nicely, went to live there for about 4 to 6 weeks to research it.
Oh, the poor thing.
I know.
I mean, how could they cope? Yeah.
What about those authors, though? I'm thinking now when you go into fantasy, science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, again, thinking of J.K. Rowling, the settings that she created in Harry Potter were tremendous, in my opinion, were tremendous.
And the amount of detail as well.
Yeah. Yes. But that must have all come from her imagination. Well, it has to. There was nothing to research, was there?
Some of the herbs and things she talks about, they do exist.
Oh, yes.
And some of the animals do exist in folklore, you know, and that sort of thing. But yes.
But the settings, I mean, the school hall that she created. I suppose we all have a vision of a big posh school and a big, big posh school halls.
Yeah.
But then she's taking it one step further, isn't she? How can I make this really fantastical?
And I think some of that is, you know, taking what we all kind of think of when we think of a, you know, a huge grand hall in a you know, an old establishment, and then adding on the kind of fantastic layer, like the portraits that can speak to you and
the
move.
Candles that float in the air.
Yes.
Yeah. The food just appearing.
Yeah, and the howlers turning up and all that sort of
and
thing.
In some ways, when you think, that's very clever, isn't it? You take something like the portraits, for example, which we've all seen, these big portraits, huge
life-size.
And then she's got that imagination where, well, I wonder what would happen if these portraits could talk.
Yes.
Or these grand staircases. What would happen if we could all move? I think that's the clever bit about the writing, especially if you're writing fantasy. In some ways, you're allowed to do whatever you like because there is no right and wrong way. You know, so
you're kind of turning the volume up to 11, aren't you?
Yeah, if you want the portrait to speak, speak away.
She definitely found a niche in the market. Eventually, after all these other people had said, oh, that's a lot. I wouldn't say they would say it was a load of rubbish, but they probably didn't see it for what it's worth.
Well, it's probably because they would have read it and thought,
nobody will be interested.
I haven't read anything like this before, so it won't be interesting.
Or it's a school story.
Yes.
With a boy with special powers.
Yeah. And again, it's that thing, isn't it? And met as many adults read it as children. Because me and my neighbour, when I didn't live here then, and we were waiting for the last one to come out, and she's a very fast reader, and we both went to somewhere like W.H. Smith's, and just there was just a stack of them in the doorway, and bought it and went home. So then we were racing each other to read it. She read hers first, but I swore it to secrecy. I said, I don't want any spoilers. No. And every now and again, Ben would pick it up. And Ben speed reads. And when we got to the end, I said, oh, this happened and that happened. He went, I know.
Yeah.
And he just picked it up occasionally when I put it down, and you could see him going like this through the pages. And he didn't know all the fine details, but he knew the basic storyline from start to finish. Yeah. And I think he probably read it in about 2 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, it was about, you know, it was like a big two, book. Wasn't it? It was huge. Yes. So, yeah, but... yeah, well, how much joy she brought to children's lives that had given up on reading. You're an ex-head teacher. Yeah, so.
I can remember seeing children sat in the playground with the latest Harry Potter book.
There you go.
Again, atmosphere, where it was set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she brought it all in, didn't she? She had the setting, she had the weather.
Yes.
It was always snowed at Christmas. Always.
She hit all the senses in one go, mm-hmm. didn't she?
Yeah.
So basically what we're saying is, you know, the setting and things like the atmosphere, the weather are super important.
Yes.
Which...
not just in crime.
No, and when we started talking about this, I thought, what are we going to talk about? I think that's it on this subject, unless anybody else has got anything to put forward.
We probably could go on, but I think we've covered it.
Yeah.
But the weather's taking a turn for the worse. It's foggy out there and there's snow. I think there's thunder due.
Don't listen to him, it's still nice.
there's a heat wave as well, but apart from that, everything's fine.
I listen to Planet Rock, and one of the presenters is a guitarist with a group called Thunder. Oh. And he does a programme every Sunday, and he always goes, thunder's coming. No, like winter's coming. So we'll leave it there. hope you've enjoyed this episode. Like, subscribe, tell your friends, and we'll see you all again next Thursday. Bye for now. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music, In Peril, was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.